Hello and welcome back to another episode of Promote the Hell Out of It. My name is Misael Trujillo and this is the podcast where I chat to people worth shouting about, figure out what keeps them motivated, how they market themselves, learn from their mistakes, find out what they've been getting up to, all that good stuff. And on today's episode, I chat to Dylan Slocum from Spanish Love Songs, a band that I absolutely love. They've released banger after banger. Their latest album, which came out last year, Brave Faces Everyone, is absolutely wonderful and very appropriate for the year we had and continue to have at the moment. It was an absolute pleasure chatting with Dylan. I had a really, really good time chatting about their marketing. Also his background, working in films as an assistant for a director. We chat a little bit about that and how that's helped how he deals with the band, I guess, or if it helps. But also just figuring out how he's feeling with everything that's going on and how they've had to adapt to the situation was really, really encouraging and relatable as well, because it's very easy just to try and glamorize the situation and sugarcoat it. But hearing that other people kind of are struggling with it and are having to change things around and figure out what to do is encouraging. We're not alone, right? I really, really hope you enjoy the conversation. Leave me a message, share it about. I like hearing from you all. And if you really want to support the show, you can buy me a coffee. Link is in the bio. Also, if you're thinking of starting your own podcast, the link for Buzzsprout, that's what I use, that's down there. If you use that link, that helps the show out too. So yeah, enjoy, and a huge thank you to Dylan for coming on the show. So how you been holding up with everything that's going on?
Fine. I mean, as fine as can be. Just working real life and working for the band. And yeah, I get my first vaccination shot next week. So that's cool.
Oh, awesome. That's good stuff. It's something to look forward to.
I think it's slightly less stressful, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's true. And I know you've been keeping super busy. I've been seeing all the Patreon stuff you're doing, adapting to the situation. How easy was it to adapt? Like, how quick was it for you guys to adapt?
I mean, we had already I had already thought about doing a Patreon. Because even before all this, like, I don't know, being a musician is kind of
for money. Yeah.
I had the idea to do a solo project on Patreon and like fund it that way and not have a label necessarily and give it out. And so, and then I pitched the idea to the band as kind of doing, because that sounded like too much work. And then I pitched the idea to the band as kind of doing it like a fan club, but a fan club that we don't have to run the administration for.
Yeah.
And when we were on tour with the Wonder Years, I had talked to Dan about their fan club and how that went for them and got some valuable feedback. And when everything shut down, I was like, okay, well, that stupid idea that I kind of talked about, we should just try to do it and see what happens. And yeah, we're at like 700 and something people every month now that subscribe, which is absolutely insane. Almost at 750. So that is
so awesome.
That's amazing. And it's such a great community. And we've made a lot of friends over there. I've described it as like a lot, especially a lot of the very close, you know, patrons who are active. They're people that I might have become friendly with if we had toured their city 6 times in the course of 3 years.
Yeah.
But it got accelerated to like that because they can contact me on the internet whenever they want. And so I've made some pretty good friends with people, which is, it's been cool. It's been a way to keep busy. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But you know, we can't complain. We have 750 people that check in every month and don't expect stuff, but like are happy to receive stuff, I guess. You know, we're always worried that we're going to, because we were on a schedule for a long time. And then this month, last 2 months, we've had some stuff due to other places that kind of, you know, we can only record and mix so many songs at a time, and we're all working full time, because as good as the Patreon is, like all things in music, it's not supporting our entire livelihood. And so, but we're always worried that we were like, oh man, we're going to miss the schedule. People are going to be mad. And everybody's like, we don't care. Just like put it out when you put it out and whatever. And it's been nice to like, kind of learn to grapple with the churn as the proper term for it. Like people that sign on and people.
Yeah, for sure.
And so like, I've never worked in a business like that. So the first few months, you know, it's like, we lost 40 people this month. What are we doing? And now it's like, whatever. Like if it disappears, it disappears. And if it doesn't, then we'll just keep doing it. So
it's funny because I do marketing as a job, and I have to deal with words like churn for businesses on a regular basis, but doing it on a personal level is a completely different thing. There's like self-esteem at stake.
Yeah, it's stressful because it's like, why don't you like me? To stay around. And it's like, you know, some people, and I mean, we've been upfront from the beginning. We understand entirely, like, you know, some people can't afford to pay $10 a month right now or whatever, however many dollars a month. And in a perfect world, if like, if we keep this up post pandemic, I think we'll get rid of the upper tiers and give everybody the same things. And it's kind of a pay what you can. But right now we have to put on our,
of course,
our dumb capitalist hats and be like, well, you know,
but it changes the dynamic as well. Right. Because you get people at shows who go to a show just because they're going with their mates. And, you know, I went to watch Manchester Orchestra once, and Andy played his solo, like a solo song that he's got. And you could hear people in the crowd be like, boo, where's the band? And it changes the dynamic because you've got people who are wholeheartedly wanting to support you, are into what you're bringing to the table, right?
That's the most positive thing is that out of the, I don't know how many fans we have, but like if you, out of the however many thousands of people on our Spotify metrics or on, you know, social media, we have very little compared to that. But the number we do have is like just people who are excited to be there, even if they're just checking out for a month. Cause like, I can't attribute like our numbers this month are going to be skewed because we're doing a March Madness bracket for the cover of the month. Like usually we just post five songs and say like, here's a poll, pick a song. And for March, we're like, all right, we're going to do a March Madness bracket of 60. We did 69 songs.
Oh, wow.
Like, pop punk or emo adjacent from 1999 to 2006. And like people are voting. Like there's a vote live now. And we've gotten a lot of people like jumping over for that. between that and we just put out a Blink cover that was voted on last month. Between the two of those, we've had a huge week, which is, it's cool. It was, we were stagnant for a long time. And then I like renewed my Photoshop and Premiere subscription and started cutting together. We had like our artists come up with like just little tiles that we could just drop things into. I started doing that like once or twice a month, being like, this is what you missed this week. And it was amazing what marketing our own thing could do for us. And I was just like, oh.
This is it. It's a really, I'm not sure how you feel about, like, obviously you started Spanish Love Songs in a situation where you knew social media was going to have to be a part of the band, but how much marketing takes up as part of the job that entails the band? Is that something you expected?
It's something I know we should do. I'm not great at it. Not nearly as much effort goes into it as shit. And I don't know. I see our peers that put in a lot of effort, and I see some peers that put in a lot of effort and we end up at the same place, which makes me be like,
well, this is for sure. Yeah.
Why should I bother? Like I barely check our Facebook anymore. Cause Facebook is a trash hole. And Twitter's fun because you get kind of, you know, you get more one-on-one interactions.
Absolutely.
And I have more friends like interacting on Twitter, and Instagram is like a grocery store now. I don't like it's a market, which is annoying. But when we're on tour, there's a lot of that. It's like, okay, we send me the photo from last night, or who took good photos and tagged us that we can credit, so I can do the post. It's like, thank you, thank you, Berlin. We're gonna be in Hamburg tonight. Like, come check us out. Doors at this time. Blah blah blah. Or it's sold out. A lot of like direct kind of marketing, and you hope that it cuts to the algorithm. like I posted something today on Instagram and I hadn't posted, well, that's not fair. I'd posted earlier this week to market the Blink cover for the Patreon. But before that, we posted on my birthday, which was middle of February, and then early February, and then Ruben's birthday, which is middle of January. Like, it's like, we're not posting right now because what the hell do we have to talk about in a pandemic? Like, taking a picture. I'm like, I don't fucking care. Like, I don't care. Like, I don't care that you're in a band and you need to let us know you're in a band. Like, everybody's in a fucking band right now. Who cares? Like, just like, I get it. We're trying to like stay alive and keep marketing ourselves so that when there's definitely a fear that when this all comes back, like people will have forgotten who you are.
Yeah.
But also like everybody's on pause right now. So they can like, you can forget all of us, I guess. Like I've grappled with it too, but at a certain point I just deleted all that shit off my phone. And I'm like, the band's not working right now. So I'm not going to do.
It's a really good outlook to have. And I think, forgive me if I'm wrong, but the way you write lyrics makes me think that you're someone who analyzes how people react to things and people's actions quite a lot, right? You're a people watcher. That is something that I've had trouble with because it makes me analyze everything I do a lot too. It makes me overthink everything I'm going to post. And for other people, it seems really easy to post stuff every day and just take selfies. Is that something that just doesn't seem natural to you?
No, not at all. And it doesn't make sense to me. Because there's just like, I don't know, I have a finite amount of energy in the day. And if I'm spending an hour agonizing over what I'm going to post, because I'm not, that's the other thing, like, and I get a little mad about this. I see people who are out taking pictures that they then repost because they're out doing stuff. And I stay home as much as possible. Like, I don't go anywhere. I haven't left the house in 3 days. You know what I mean? And so I don't, what am I going to post a picture of the same fucking sweats I've been wearing for 6 weeks straight that haven't been washed because I'm too lazy? Like, I don't have the energy for it. I'd rather focus on doing something for the Patreon or writing new songs whenever that happens. Or we're doing some other stuff that, you know, I spent half my day today. I'm like at work, but in between my downtime, I worked on two songs that I had to like get out to the band. And so there's just so much other stuff to worry about that if we're not promoting anything, I don't really feel like filling the airwaves with noise. Because it speaks to the bigger problem of like, you can't cut through everything because everything is so loud all the time. Right. Yeah. And it's encouraged because if you're getting constant engagement and I forget what the new metrics are for a lot of that shit, but like if you're getting constant engagement and you keep putting it out there and it like the algorithm picks that up and it encourages you to just more, more, more. But like, if you're not touring and you're not releasing a single and you're not doing anything, it's just like, and I am accused. I did that today. I posted a post because I was like, I should post something. And it's almost been a year since our show. So I'm going to post some like joke thing about our dreams being crushed. It was a dumb post. I probably shouldn't have. Like, I was mad when I made it, but people were like, oh, I hate this. But if you have nothing to put out, I don't want to hear from you. I don't care what your thoughts are on most things. I've always been that way though. So like even like my personal stuff, you know, people that like constantly were posting, especially like early Facebook where it's like, I did this today and now I feel this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, just shut up. I don't think you're that interesting to begin with because nobody's that interesting.
One of the things I do for choosing who I get on the podcast, because let's face it, there's a bunch of bands that I listen to, especially listen to growing up, who you then go and check what they do on social. And I'm like, I do not want this person. Like, because sometimes people give too much away and you're like, this isn't someone I want to sit down and have a conversation with.
Yeah. I try not to give anything away. If I could, we would be a band that doesn't use social media. We're not quite there yet. It is a dream of mine.
Do you think it's possible?
There's a few bands that have done it pretty successfully. Not no social media, but like a very, I don't know. It's weird. There's a few that have done it where they're like, this is just cryptic, barely hear social media. And then there's a lot of bands who like don't run their social media, like their managers run it.
Yeah.
And you can tell who those bands are because it's very
by the sure.
which I'm fine with getting to that point. Because largely to this point, it's me that like is the voice of the social media. And when we started working with our managers, they're like, we think you should keep your voice in your socials. And I don't use my personal Twitter very often or like my personal Instagram, because as much as it's a band, like since day one, the kind of ideological focus has been from like my viewpoint.
Yeah.
And so very much like the Mountain Goats is a band, but the Mountain Goats Twitter account is John Darnielle. Like I've kind of taken that approach because I'm not also like, why would I try to cultivate this many fans again?
Completely. And do twice the amount of work, like have to come up with different posts for each one.
Saying it like, you know, I'm friends with people who are in much bigger bands than us who run, they have like a band one and their personal one, and like their personal one has more Twitter followers than our band does. And it's like, how did you do that? Like, I don't have the energy for that. I can barely post on the one. I don't have the bandwidth to do two. I guess if I wasn't working full time, we could do that. You know, this would be a much different story if it wasn't a pandemic.
Yeah.
Because we would have been touring. Like, we had all quit our jobs and we're ready to tour all last year.
Yeah.
And so when we went home, we were like, oh, okay, well, unemployment will get us through so far. And then when unemployment ended, it was like, oh, shit. So we all went right back to full-time work, which like 2020 was supposed to be the year that we got to quit our jobs and go do music, at least for that cycle, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So to be back at full-time work, I'm just like, this is soul crushing. And I remember how hard it was. Because even like once we put out Schmaltz, I was working less and less. Like I was just picking up jobs. But when we were writing Schmaltz, that was like, we were all full time.
Yeah.
And I forgot how crushing and slow moving everything is. Like we've owed songs to different people for like, we've owed the label some stuff for like 6 months, not owed them, but like,
yeah.
Been working on stuff internally for like 6 months. And I'm just like, it's not going to move any faster because we have 3 hours a day to work on things. You know what I mean? In between like, also being healthy, like getting up, trying to exercise, trying to eat, working your day, getting off late, trying to do music, and then like eating dinner and go to bed in a reasonable hour, which sounds so like responsible and dumb, but like,
but you need it because then there's the limit of not hitting burnout as well, and being self-aware of not hitting burnout, right?
Yeah. And on the weekends, it's like there's usually something to do for the Patreon, or it's just, I sound like I'm complaining. It's great. It's great to have so many things to do. I'm busier than I've ever been, but it's not conducive to like working on new stuff, which is
of course.
Okay. Sorry. I got to work.
That's so good.
I work for a guitar plugin company. So cool. It's just depositing guitar plugins. That's so not my job, but I do that as a side project of my job.
Cool. So is that what you're doing full time at the moment or?
Yeah. I got
so you
super
didn't go back to Hollywood.
No. We had left Meredith and I had moved out of LA and, it's too expensive to go back.
So we
were in Iowa just holing up waiting to see what was going to happen. And then Iowa got hit with a super big storm.
Yeah.
Like our van was within like 2 feet of being absolutely destroyed type storm. Tree and a power line. So like we had left the house to go ship something I had sold. And my car moved out of its usual spot. Then while we were out, like we got huge storm warning alarms and we were at her mom's house and she's like, you need to get back because this is bad. And I was just dropping something off at UPS. And as soon as I walked outside, there was like 80, 90 mile an hour winds. And we were like, oh, we should have went home. And so we like started driving. And then, there's a store here called Best Buy and it like the giant beef flew off and like almost hit our car.
No way.
To get inside. And so we like went inside this Best Buy and like stayed in there. And then it was like a 2 hour storm with like sustained 90 mile an hour winds. And then afterwards we like made our way home through all the wreckage and like the city was just like very, very badly damaged. And when we got back to her parents' house where my car was, there was 3 trees. And then her mom's car had a giant tree through it and where the van was,
yeah,
it was like a tree at the front that was 1.5 feet short. There was a tree on the side that was like 3 feet short, and there was a power line, like a fold down power line that was a foot and a half short.
You got lucky.
The van was like completely spared. So after that, we like, we're like, well, and we didn't have power there for like 2 weeks, and they didn't have internet for like a month, and we work online now. So we're like, okay, well, time to move. So we moved to Nashville. And as soon as we got here, we were both able to find jobs. And I had a buddy who was working at this company, and he left, and he's like, you want my job? And
I was like, that's cool.
Like, yeah, if they'll hire me. Cause it's kind of a perfect combination of what I do anyway. So it's like guitar and computers, which is
awesome.
That's my normal interests.
It's I've heard that you'd also all given up your accommodation in prep for tour, right?
Yeah, we all had nowhere to live. That's why we were at Meredith's parents' house, because the tour ended in St. Louis on March 13th. And it was like, well, where's the closest place we can go where we have like shelter from this pandemic and where we can get food, like in store food? And so we went back to Iowa. Kyle went back to LA, moved into his grandma's house. Ruben went back and moved into his parents' house. And then Trevor went back to Cleveland and moved into his mom's house. And we were like, cool, bunch of 30-year-olds moving back home. Very exciting. That kind of, you know, that it would have been fine if it was in between tours for 3 weeks and say, I'm going to crash in the basement for 3 weeks, but it turned into like 9 or 10 months. But you know, so like we moved back out to our own place, and it was funny to like reestablish a life. And same with Kyle. And so it's just like, oh, getting back to being like a working adult, instead of being some weird person who is on tour, you know, 10 months out of the year.
For sure. But it's odd, right? Because everyone's been in this stationary situation for ages now.
But yeah,
I think something that's not thought about a lot with any of the arts industries, but specifically bands, is that you've got a group of people who then have to figure out what to do in that time. Yeah. And it stops all the trajectory. You're dealing with a load of personality types. It's not like you're on break and it's just go back to work.
There's no work to go back to. It's been interesting to see different bands, how they've adapted. Some have just been quiet and some have been surviving. And it's a good thing the vaccines are hitting as they are, because I feel like if we had given this another 6 months, you would have started. And granted, we're going to be in quarantine for at least another 6 months, but you would have started seeing a lot of bands probably just calling it. It just would have been, it's weird. It's weird to worry. It's weird to like worry about just surviving and working a job and trying to like establish some semblance of a career that will provide for you. And cause the future is unknown at the moment. And then also worrying about this whole other thing that you can't actually do, but you have to like put out there and keep people engaged in and be like, oh, I hope when I can come back, like we can go do our job. It would be so much easier to just be like, all right, we're done playing music. The band has been real, but like, we'll see you guys later. Maybe we'll come back. Maybe we won't, but like, we're done. I don't want to worry about it. And we haven't done that. I've thought about it. I've thought about just being like, I wouldn't be stressed out and have to work on something today, or, you know, go do, I don't know, just put my energy elsewhere. It feels almost irresponsible and frivolous to put any energy towards being a musician when the future, even if there was no pandemic, the future is uncertain. So there was a lot of soul searching, being like, is this really what you're going to do with your life? Because the bottom can drop out at any moment. And then if the bottom drops out, we don't have a retirement plan. Like, we don't get 401ks. We're barely, and like a lot of us were reaching the point where we've not worked long enough. We're like, we're not going to be able to get good jobs back in what we were doing to begin with. So it's kind of an irresponsible thing. And I think there was a lot of like, well, what could I do instead of music? What should I do instead of music? And you know, none of us have arrived at that point yet. And hopefully, or thankfully / hopefully, if everything goes well, there seems to be some light on the horizon, but who knows?
It's a really tough situation, isn't it? I was talking to Miguel Shen from Teenage Bottle Rocket, and they're obviously in the very blessed situation of when it happened, the band was making enough for them to plan how to keep everyone having an income, not a great income, but an income. And I think that people come at this from very selfish ways. Like, I'm sure you remember bands that meant a lot to you. And I think fans always come at it from how much the music, like, but at the end of the day, it's what you've mentioned, retirement plans, health, like having the capability of having a health plan and looking after yourself, all that stuff becomes really important.
Super important. And I would argue that a lot of people in this industry are probably not good at that stuff to begin with. Why we do this. It's tough. I mean, it's weird too. I feel like we were lucky enough to have just started getting to the point where we could survive off the band because we know what it's like to not. And so we could like pull back and batten down and be like, all right, well, whatever. Music was fun for the 2 months that we weren't working. But I don't feel worse because I mean, they're better off to begin with, but like bands who haven't had jobs for 20 years and now they have zero income coming in. I'm just like, well, what the fuck are you going to go do? Like it sucks. And I feel bad, but also, you know,
it's just a tough situation. I remember you talking about, doing baseball and you stopped cause you had a busted knee.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Busted, but busted's an injured knee that wasn't going to get better quickly and would have turned into arthritis.
Yeah, because I've got a bad knee. How's that been with touring and stuff? Is that something that you have to look after, or have you been all right?
No, I manage to stay pretty. I wear comfortable shoes when we play, and I try not to slam that knee too hard. It doesn't bother me too much unless I'm running, like or any like super high impact. Occasionally walking, like if it's cold outside. But basically with me, I just don't have any cartilage in the outside of my left knee anymore. And so any like high impact thing just wrecks it. Which is why I stopped. Cause they're like, yeah, if you just keep pitching and hitting that knee, you know, a couple hundred times a day, you're just going to have degeneration. But it's not too bad touring. I don't think I've ever actually hurt it touring. Now that I think about it,
it's good stuff.
I'm much more likely to roll my ankle or just get sick. That's like the common tour injuries is mostly just sickness. Just seeing so many people. I'm definitely just going to wear a mask from now on when we tour.
Yeah. There's nothing you want less than, I'll tell you what always used to happen to me is getting sick as soon as I got back off tour.
Oh, that makes sense.
Like that so badly.
Body's like keyed up and like adrenaline running, and then as soon as you get off it's like okay I can relax, and then you just get sick. It was like that, that was a joke when we used to work on movies. Like you'd work on a movie and it'd be super intense for like 2 months, and this is like the first week off you were down, like you were super sick and your body was just like, why did you do this to me? So yeah, I feel like it's a similar sensation. I get sick most tours, and it's usually just because like we'll be somewhere new and it'll be cold and I'll stay out all night drinking. You know, bad. I had to stop drinking on tours, not entirely, but mostly just to not have my throat hurt every night.
Yeah. I heard you talk about that on Giles's podcast. Mm-hmm. I love Great Cynics. I had Giles on this podcast actually.
Oh, wonderful.
A while back. Yeah. No. Is there anything else that you've looked at doing to keep yourself being able to do this stuff, like making the band sustainable in some way?
I think I wish I could say yes, but no.
No's a good answer too.
I don't think there's anything else you can do. Even like we got our royalty statement from one of our labels in Europe, and the email was like, well, as we've been seeing, nobody's listening to music because they're not driving or going to the gym. And also, podcasts are taking over the world because Spotify acquired podcasts. So everybody just wants to listen to podcasts. So music is down. It's fine. I mean, music is down X%, and you know, we're not able to drive around and play shows and sell people t-shirts. So I don't know, write songs for other people, but like even that's not a band activity. On like a band scale, no, like we've always said it. We're like a blue collar band. We have to be able to tour and do our job. Like we're a working class band. We don't play cool music that's going to get us billions of streams and make us a couple hundred thousand dollars. Like we have to work for what we get. Not that other people aren't working, but like we have to like put in the time.
Yeah.
Unless this Machine Gun Kelly thing like really has a resurgence, in which case maybe, but I think we're too old and we're not young and hot is always my comment to people who ask about why we're not like,
I won't comment on that.
Yeah. We're not young and hot. So we're not going to be a chart topping band. We're going to play middling indie rock hopefully for as long as possible. And then one day we won't, or maybe we will. Maybe I'll get to die on stage. That would be cool.
I've heard you say that before. Yeah. I think there's nothing better than dying doing what you love, right? Like, yeah. If whatever that may be.
I hope I don't actually die on stage. That would be horrifying.
Do a Tommy Cooper.
It would just be awful. Is he down this time? No, but... you know, metaphorically die on stage.
Have you heard the Scroobius Pip and Dan Lissac?
For what?
Scroobius Pip and Dan Lissac is a UK, he actually hosts a podcast now, but he was a hip hop artist, kind of hip hop, spoken word, kind of mixture of rock, hip hop, electro. But he did a song all about Tommy Cooper and how it is a weird legacy that it left because people clapping at someone's death and it becomes this like iconic moment that is like this beautiful moment, poetic. And it's like, so he died on stage, dude.
Yeah, that's not good. No.
So did you work on the film Fantasy Island? Were you working on that at the time?
I was, but I didn't get to do any of the fun stuff.
None of the fun stuff.
When were we doing that? When did that come out? Did that come out last year?
No, this came out. Must be 2 years ago now, right?
When we did test screenings.
It might be last year. It's been a weird year.
Okay. So I was working. I guess I could pull up the emails to check. But I don't remember if we shot that in 2018 or 2019. I think it was 2019 that we shot it. So I was doing the band stuff pretty heavily. And we had a tour planned. I think I was leaving LA too. But it was like that winter, like January. And, I didn't want to leave for 3 months and go to Indonesia. Makes sense. I got to stay back and manage the office from LA and coordinate a lot of stuff on the LA front. I don't know. You can tell I was super involved in the day to day.
Did you enjoy that job?
It was fine. Making movies, what a lot of people don't realize is that they're incredibly boring. And if you're not in a position of decision making or power, they're even more boring. So it's a lot of just standing around and like being like, well, when does my boss need coffee? And when does he need to set? My job is a little bit more fun because I was working for the director. So in addition to directing, he has a million people trying to like get something from him every day and being like, can you approve this costume? Can you do this? So I was like the gatekeeper of like, you have 10 minutes to talk to wardrobe. Then you have 10 minutes to go to production design. Then we have to go look at the set. Then we got to be back on the other side and like set up to shoot. So that was cool. And I was getting into more kind of junior producing stuff. Technically on the last two movies, I was supposed to have a producer credit and they didn't give me one, but by that point I left. So I didn't really complain about it. Fucking Blumhouse. That was rude.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, my boss. Oh, I actually remember he sent me an email saying that they were fighting him on it and he wanted to give it to the writers instead of me because I wasn't there as often, which is fair.
Got it.
We don't got to get into the nitty.
Yeah.
Just recalled the email. I can't really complain because I was like, yeah, I don't care. Don't give me my producer credit. Give it to your writers. Who also don't need it because they wrote the movie. they did a lot of work, but like, I was starting to do a lot of like junior producing stuff and, it was fine. My boss wanted me to come like stay on full time and do more stuff and kind of branch out into producing his movies. But the band was doing its thing and music is way more interesting.
Was it a no-brainer for you?
Yeah, I think so. Like as much as having a steady, it's not even a steady paycheck because you're making movies, and if you don't have a movie being made, you're not getting paid.
Yeah.
But it was more steady and not better, but where I was, at least, you know, if you can work your way up, the pay is way better. But in the kind of junior roles, you're still making dog shit pay. Except on that Netflix movie I worked on, that was sweet. I got paid decent. Cause Netflix just prints money. And it's like, there you go.
That's what everyone needs to be aiming to work for.
Yeah. I don't think it's like that anymore. This was early in the Netflix film days. I think now I don't know. It's just, I was happy to leave LA because it's just as big of a trash industry as music is, and possibly more fake. I mean, I would argue more fake. But like, it's the same industry where like a few people want to hold all the power and hold all the money and don't want to pay anybody else anything. So like,
yeah,
well, at least I'll do the
things
one
roundabouts
and sing at people and feel egotistically validated at least, instead of sitting on a film set putting out fires all day, which is. Even in like a junior position, there's always like, I don't know. It's just so tense. It's an intense thing. And like, you basically are like starting a business and forming this community and like making something collectively. And it's tough. And that's why there's a lot of bad movies. Like it's hard to make good movies, and nobody's like setting out to like make a bad movie. But because of that,
really?
That's why I try not to criticize. Like I'm like a very quick to judge type of personality. Like if I hear a song I don't like or see a movie I don't like, I'm like, oh God, this is terrible. But I try not to do that. I've tried to untrain that just because like you took the time and effort and energy to like put yourself out there and try to do something. And that's commendable. And so, yeah, I mean, having worked on movies that like were not critically praised, like it wasn't like we were setting out to be like, you know, we're going to make a movie that critics shit on. Like, it's like, no, we're going to make a cool fucking movie and hopefully people like it. And if they don't, then like we did our job, you know, but hopefully we get to do the next one. It's very much like music that way where it's like, okay, but well, what can I do to scam you to get to the next one? but yeah, it's a weird industry and it was fun, and tough and boring, and it was not hard to leave. You know, and now I don't think about it very often because music is more fun, I think. If you know, I could play in a band again, this is pre-pandemic, but I could play in a band for the world and like hopefully make out like a nice blue collar life and then do something after that. The same thing, I'd probably fall into the same trap, or like your career in the music industry or your career in the movie industry isn't forever either. And the drop off is just as steep. Hopefully you've made more money to save, but like, it's still there. And so it's like, I can play music and have fun doing this, or like best case, I can go write for a TV show and like stress out and be in an office all day. And,
yeah.
I have a lot of friends who are on shows who are like, we thought it was so glamorous and it fucking sucks.
For sure.
With all things you think are going to be good, they just suck.
But that's why these conversations are important, right? Because false expectations are everywhere. And yeah. I think there's a lot of false expectations with all this stuff. And I end up talking about films a lot on the podcast just because I'm a massive film nerd. But I actually enjoy a lot of trash as well. I sometimes like seeing, especially films with low budget. I love seeing, it's like a punk band. You're watching someone put in a lot of hard work and create something.
It's a lot of fun. It feels like a punk band when you're working on those movies, you know, slightly nicer accommodations, but you know, it was weird. I've worked on a broad spectrum of budgets, but the last few we did were like lower budget horror movies. And I say lower budget, like 5 million, but, that's a small amount compared to, you know, an Avengers movie or something.
Yeah.
It was a good time. It was a lot of fun. I wish I'd done it when I was not younger. I mean, I was 24 when I started working.
I was going to say,
I wish I'd gotten back to music sooner. Cheaper. I didn't get to go to Indonesia though. That was the Fantasy Island question. No, I didn't get to go. I should have gone. But also when my boss got back, he had dropped like almost 30 pounds. And I was like, and he's like not my size to begin with. He's like, And so he dropped 30 pounds and I was like, oh shit. And I'm like, how was it? He's like, fine. It's so tough. Like, oh, really? It's just so hard. The amount of pages we were shooting and like being in the jungle or,
yeah,
you know, an island or, you know, all this shit. And he's like, it was rough. I was like, oh, okay. Well, then I didn't get my credit. Damn it. The last time I saw him, I actually went to a test screening and was like, this is cool. And like, didn't even get to say bye. I was like, okay, well.
And what about the skills you learn from being in those environments? Because you must have had to deal with egos and stuff on set. Is there skills you picked up that prepared you or that you translated over into how you deal with the band?
I mean, probably nothing I tried to do. Being able to handle high stakes stress is a common one. And like, there's very little we do in the band where it's like, okay, well, if we fuck this up, we lost $300,000 for the day. And it's like taking too long and people don't get to go on break at the right time and working into overtime and, you know, have to order more meals and like we miss the day, you know, all that shit. So that's helpful in like recording, I guess, but nothing on like the day to day other than being able to be uncomfortable for long periods of time. And like, if you want to get down to like the egos of it, yeah. Being the 800-pound gorilla in the room is a good way to be. If you can back it up, if you are in fact that person, it's a great place to be the power person. I was never that in the film industry, but I've been around a lot of people. And a lot of times I've been around all the people who I'm like, oh, you're a fucking dick. Like, I don't know, who the fuck are you? And it's like, I'm your boss. And it's like, I don't give a shit. I had a producer on one movie who's like the biggest dick. He's like typical what you think of when you think of a producer.
Yeah.
And he called me Brian for the first whole week I worked. And he wasn't even my boss. Like, he was a producer on the movie and I worked for the director. So like different departments, even though he hired my boss basically. But yeah, he called me Brian for like the first week. And every time he'd be like, it's Dylan. And he'd be like, okay. And he'd call me Brian. And so by the end of like, he knew better at the end of the movie than to actually talk to me. Cause I'd be like, what? Like, what do you want? Cause I'm not afraid. I'm like, I'm not scared of you. You're not going to ruin my Hollywood career, dude. And if you thought you could, like, oh, great. This is a sweet Netflix movie or whatever movie. I don't remember what movie it was, but yeah, just somebody, you know, there's a lot of people who like, just like to be dicks for the sake of it.
That's just society in general. A lot of dicks.
Yeah. I get mad about that shit. You know? Yeah. I get fuck that guy.
Yeah. No, I have to not look at social media in the morning for a good couple of hours, or I will be fuming for 4 or 5 hours, like quite easily. And my partner will wake up and I won't even say good morning. I'll just start ranting about whatever.
Yeah, I definitely try to ignore. I get very riled up very easily. So I try to not, which is, yeah, easier said than that. That's like, the way I just said that is like when you tell somebody you're depressed and they go like, well, have you just tried not being sad? But when it comes to being angry at people, I have found that I can just not be angry at people. Like, I have to choose to engage and be angry over somebody being a dick because I can just ignore them, versus depression, which is you can't ignore.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, it's the same thing. It's just like, I have to not engage or else I'll get consumed by it. And I'll even do things where like, I try not to be mean on the internet because that's dumb. Like, we don't need that. And I'll like fire off a comment. I'm like, nope, pull it back. Like, you don't need to be being a dick and contributing to whatever is this nonsense, the noise. Yeah. If you don't have anything constructive to say, just like, shut up. That's my best.
That's it. But the amount, it's easier said than done. The amount of times I undo like what I've just written, I type messages out, delete them, type them out again, delete them.
Oh, absolutely. It's a classic. Yeah, it's weird. It's like, if people didn't, yeah, what would we lose if people just shut up? Like, oh no, we wouldn't have fucking hot takes on how we're supposed to feel about a movie, or like, I don't know. I have a hard time too with people being declarative on the internet. Like, it's like the human equivalent of that hand clap emoji where it's like a word and then a clap. And I'm doing the motion like an idiot. I find that to be so condescending and troublesome to be like, I am the authority, and like, this is what you do. And I'm going to criticize, like, I don't know, man. Like, maybe, I don't know. And like, I'll try to empathize with that person. But at the same time, it's like, why are you shouting at me about something that, I don't know. I get hard. I have a hard time with people declaring things because, I don't know. Nobody knows anything.
That's bang on. Yeah. That's bang on. Yeah. I'm very similar in that way. And also I find it very, I guess, difficult to trust what people are saying online anyway, because it's so dictated by wanting to get attention or get likes or just be liked by the people that you want to be liked by. There's so much of that I've found myself engaging less and less because it's tiring and draining.
Yeah, it's exhausting and it's not worth it. And it's not real life. So like,
and it's funny you mentioned, like the anger, you can choose not to be angry, which is completely true. But I found that for me, it was very linked to my depression as well, because the more I get angry, the more likely I am to get depressed.
I didn't want to touch on that side of the equation, but yeah. Or like if you're already depressed, you're prone to get angry. But I feel like that's a good thing to know. Cause then the next time you're like, why am I yelling at this person on the internet? Like, what is that really saying about me? What's wrong with me? Maybe I should like examine myself and figure out like what the hell is wrong before I just fire off at somebody, you know, about how they're dumb for not liking this band I like, you know, or they're dumb for liking a band. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And there's stuff like that. Yeah. Where I always think of all the bands that I've not liked that are probably the best band ever, but I just literally heard two seconds of the song and was like, nah, don't like
it. Weird. It's weird doing this like Patreon bracket. The March Madness is funny because it's like, oh, I wildly don't understand people's taste in music like at all.
I didn't want to say that, but I've seen the charts and it made like some of the choices made me go, oh,
I hope they weren't my choices.
maybe sometimes.
Super fun. Yeah, it's weird. Just like things that I hold dearly, people don't, and that's fine. But, you know, there's a certain point where it's like, yeah, but my taste isn't bad, is it? Like, you do like that thing where you're like, you know, it was really funny. Or like a certain song gets voted for and you're like, man, if that many people like that song and that many people also like my band, what does that mean about my band?
I had a moment like that at Heavy Fest, a festival that was over in the UK. And Crime in Stereo played it. Super excited because they'd been gone for ages. And there was like three people in the crowd. It was bad festival management. It was a hardcore festival. And then the super big hardcore band playing in the tiny little tent that was like, but I did have that moment of like, oh, wow, do I have really bad taste in music here?
And a lot of times I take pride in that where I'm like, oh, you don't like this song? Well, you just have bad taste. So shut up. Much like, I don't know, music's weird. It's entirely subjective. So
how was it getting to be on lineups with people that you must have looked up to? And I'm going to say Chuck Reagan, just because I would have been pretty excited.
That was a cool one. It's always fun. It's nice when you meet these bands and they're nice to you, as opposed to like ignoring you or nobody's ever been mean to us. Well, nobody that was a hero. We've had a few bands like talk shit on us at a fest. One time we had a band of a terrible, awful band that I have no problem saying how bad they suck. Be mean, like talk shit about us, like while we weren't in the room to another band that we kind of respected. What? Like Meredith was like sitting in the room and this band was just talking absolute shit about us to a band that shouldn't have been. Being like, they should have been like, hey, that's not cool. But then like two members of that band got in a fight backstage and they all got kicked out. So they can fuck off. But everybody's been usually nice. Chuck is Mr. Reagan. I think I can call him Chuck. Charles. He's the best. He's super nice. We got feedback from our manager, from our agent when we played those. So we played them in America first. And then we played the Europe ones. And in Europe, our agent was like, yeah, they were super nice. They're like, Spanish love songs are so shy. Like what? We don't know. We didn't know what to make of them because they just like quiet and stick themselves. And I don't, and I'm just like, that's really funny because our whole thing is like, we're going to shut up and get out of your way because this isn't our show and we don't want to be in your way. Like we're going to show up, do our job and then let you be the headliner. Who's like, who brought us along. And so it was super funny. And I, you know, and our agent was like, no, they respect it. They were just like, they're so shy. We didn't know what to make of them. I was like, that's fun. This is great. And so by the end, like we're friendly and I'm, you know, sure the next time I see Chuck, I'll say hi and it'll be great. But it was great. Like we finished the show and we were just like, thanks so much. Thanks for having us. And he's like, it was so great. He's like, oh, man, I love you guys. And like gave us a hug. He's like, thanks for doing this with us. And I was just like, this is how it should be. Even if you don't remember my name in 5 weeks, that's fine. We're on tour for 3 weeks, you know? But that's, yeah, it's great. We've never toured with anybody who's like an outright dick to us. And dear God, if we did, we wouldn't be on that tour. We would just leave.
That's good. That's good. I think, yeah, that's the way it should be. Right. And I think that's partly why I asked about the skills you bring over from your previous job. Right. Because there's a lot of bands that are in these situations as kids.
Yeah.
But you had some lived experience and you've been in situations that require being professional before.
Yeah. There's a lot of bands who like, not bad. That sounds so general. I've seen bands who feel like they need to play the game. They need to take the $100 guarantee to play the shit, play on the tour where they're fucking losing money so they can. And there is a level of like exposure that comes when you play with a bigger band and bigger bands should not be taking advantage of that. But at the same time, like my favorite story about that type of shit is we got asked to play South by Southwest to play two different showcases. And we're like, yeah. And we're like, yeah, we'll do it. Send over the offer. And there was like a delay in communication. And our publicist like said that we were playing South by. And NPR picked it up. It's like Spanish Love Songs is playing South by. You should check them out. And in the meantime, we got the offer back and it was for a zero pay. And I said, cool, we're not playing. Have fun. And like you can do that. You're allowed to say no to shitty offers or like when you ask shitty things, you can say no. And that's been a big learning process. Like somebody will come to me for something, be like, hey, we're trying to do this or that. And really they're just trying to make money. And I'm not gonna get any money for it, but I'm gonna put in a bunch of effort. And it depends if it's like to promote the band and like do something good for the band or it's for a good cause. Absolutely. If it has nothing to do with us other than like you trying to make more money, you can fuck out. You can get the fuck right out of here. I'm not going to give up any of my time for you. I've got more important things to do. And thankfully we don't work with people like that. And we've made it well known that like we will not settle for shittiness. And yeah, I think that just comes with age or like just knowing musicians are taught to not value what they do. From the beginning, right down to like society. Music is everywhere. Like music's in fucking Target now, you know? And so you're wandering through a Target and you hear some song and then you get in your car and there's a song on the radio. Then you turn on your TV and there's a song in the background. Then you go to your computer and there's a podcast or a song. And then you go to YouTube and there's something playing in the back. Like there's just sound everywhere and we value it. We value it at zero. And the companies that control this stuff also value it at zero. That's why Spotify doesn't pay us anything. You know, I can't wait till Spotify is all podcasts and they can really not pay musicians anything because there's no music on it. That's fine. Let's go. But we're taught not to value ourselves. And I think there's a learning process to be like, no, I'm worth something. And for us, it was like the first time we got a decent, like we ended a tour with a decent amount of money or like we had a good deal because AF Records is not about that bullshit. So we had a good deal with AF Records. And like the first time we got a good royalties check from them, I was like, oh, wait. People should be paying us for stuff. This is not a free enterprise that we do for fun. Like this is a fucking life that we're trying to live.
That's it. That's it.
So I think, yeah, I think that's a lot of it. And I hope there's been some chatter. Somebody posted the day, like when this is all over, like we're going to stop offering bands like $150 for shows, right? Like on big tours. And I was just like, I'm glad people are having that conversation. He's like, yeah, you shouldn't be, you know? unless there's like, unless the tour package is like $300, then yeah, maybe. But yeah, it's tough. And yeah, I think it's just about learning and kind of valuing what you do. If what you do has value to people, if it doesn't have value to people, then you're just being, I'm worth, you know, I wouldn't go to a, it's knowing your, not knowing your place, knowing your value. Yeah. It's just knowing your value. Like I wouldn't, I wouldn't go to certain festivals and be like, you should pay us X amount of money. But then there's other festivals that we get lowballed and I'm like, no, we'll see you, like, we'll see you next year. Like, that's fine. And thankfully there's some that are fair and some that aren't, and we just, you'll never see us on the ones that aren't, because we don't got to waste our time. Like, we're not going to lose money to go. I don't know. It's like the whole, like, we'll pay you an exposure thing. Like, that's,
yeah, it's rubbish.
That's dumb.
It's rubbish. And I feel like there's, it's almost like a word of mouth thing, you know, like, yeah, especially with punk or rock bands. Like, it's like you go and you play for your mate's like DIY venue. Yeah. And you play that for like 150 quid, and then word gets out that that's the fee, that's the rate, and that price. And I say 150, starting at 50 quid over here in the UK. Like,
that DIY price is great because it was a DIY show, and like they probably passed a hat around and you sold some merch, and people were psyched, and it was a good DIY show. And you play a fucking corporate venue, you know, and it's like, oh, this is all we got for you. And it's like, well, then you should have had less catering or something. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. We've also learned, we got into this so late that everything we kind of learned about like tour managing ourselves, at least in the States, and we didn't have an agent for a long time. So it's a lot of DIY booking. Everything we've learned is just like, we're adults and we need more to survive. So I remember we played a show once, I forget where it was. And the promoter was like, all right, here's your pay. It's not going to be a hugely packed show, but there was like a, you know, 30 or 40 kids there. And I was like, yeah, what about the buyouts? And he's like, what are you talking about? I was like, our writer or our advance said, we need buyouts for dinner. And he was like, what? And I was like, what? Like, we're not going to lose money to play the show. I was like, you can have, like, we can just leave. He was like, oh, okay, here's 40. Yeah, man, like, this is like standard procedure. I don't care what, like, don't tell me you've never given a band a buyout.
For sure, yeah.
You know, which, yeah, it's weird. It's a weird thing. And I don't know who started paying bands for dinner, but like, it's a practice I'm very on board with. And so
we'll be trying. And there's weird cultures with all that kind of stuff. And I think people need to start appreciating, especially the punk culture, start appreciating that if you want to be part of this community, you need to put into the community.
Every community should go to Germany and learn from German how to take care of bands.
Yeah, the best ever gig I played was in Germany, like, for sure.
We've had bad gigs in Germany, but not because somebody is like not doing their job well.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's like you show up, there's a place to stay, even if it's not the nice, even if it's a squat above this playing, and there's like a magic cat running around and like music bouncing bouncing you till 6 a.m. when you have to get up. There's always a place to sleep. There's always a dinner of some sort, even if it's like vegan dirt curry. Like there's some type of, you know, I mean, we're mostly vegan, so like we've eaten, you know, that's our own fault. We had some questionable curry. Like, it's not even curry. It's like, here's the leftover vegetables with a bunch of spices on them that we cook down because we don't, or a lot of spaghetti. That's the other one you get, is spaghetti. There's always a meal, and there's always like a refrigerator full of beer. Like, and then they pay you well, even if for like a DIY show. Yeah, everybody should learn from that. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I would not want to be a booker. I'm saying all this stuff. But like, I'm scared when touring does come back, like, what's going to be left? Cause we can do a Patreon and like put out content. The guy who books our show in fucking Cincinnati, he can't do anything right now. And more so than him, because sometimes bookers can be mean to me. Like the staff at that bar, like, what are they doing? Or like the sound guy, what is
that
person doing? And so like they keep, the entire industry is on hold, you know, even like, yeah, literally everybody who works in music who isn't able to put out some sort of content is just like, what have they been up to or been able to do? And I feel fucking terrible. So I probably shouldn't be mad at them when we come back, but I definitely will be if they're dead.
You will be. Yeah, no, I think it's a really important conversation to have. And, you know, I think that's why I like talking about marketing within the punk rock community, because it's important for promoters to be able to pay bands well. It's important for everyone working within that community to know how to handle the business side of things and make it work, right? Dylan, it's been so, so great having you on the podcast. I've really, really enjoyed it. Is there anything you want to plug before we go?
I should plug the Patreon.
Of course.
I hate doing it. I feel like it's all I talk about now, because we were one of the bands, we weren't close to being the first band to do it, but we were one of the bands who did it and like talked about it a lot within our like small circle of friends. So like everybody's like, oh, tell us about this Patreon. I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. Patreon.com/Spanish Love Songs. We do monthly covers that are picked by the fans, and we do reimagined songs and free merch at certain levels. And I just decided I'm gonna do some flexies for the group.
Cool.
Out of a lyrics book, because I don't want to do a lyrics book because it sounds terrible. The flexi seems more original. Shit like that. And then like we do live streams and we do a podcast. Of course we do a podcast. It's not as good as this. It's mostly us just sitting around.
Sure. It's a lot better.
No, it's not good at all. I'm terrible at hosting a podcast. Like I can be on a podcast because I can just talk. When I host a podcast, I just want to talk. It's like, dude, you got to shut up and like let other people talk.
That's it.
But yeah, that's, and then, you know, listen to our music, Spanish Love Songs, find us online. Yeah, I don't know.
All the links will be in the bio, everything.
And PayPal, send a PayPal to somebody who works in the entertainment industry or restaurant industry, or just check in and see how they're doing. We're checking and see how everybody's doing. That's what I'll plug. It might be shifting because the days are getting longer again, but like 2 weeks ago, I think everybody I knew was the most depressed they've been in a decade at least. Or if not ever. So there's a lot of checking in those last few weeks. Millie, how you doing? Is it as dark as I think it is? Cause it's that dark for me. So I started working with my windows open. Like, give me all of the sunlight.
Yeah. That's it. It's the UK, so I could definitely need as much sunlight as I can get.
I grew up in Southern California. I mean, it gets gloomy there, but not like I live in Nashville now where there's actual weather. And like winter was winter. And so I was like, I've had this before. I always joked about wanting to move to Portland. And Kyle was like, dude, you're this depressed living in sunny California. Like, what are you going to do if you live where it rains most of the year? He's like, I worry for you. And I was like, no, I love the rain. But you know, this has been a true test this winter.
Yeah. I think everyone who likes feeling sad to some extent thinks that they'll love the rain and miserable weather until they're in that situation.
I know. I never thought I would miss San Diego so much. It's like the opposite of how I live. You know, it's a lot of, it's hard to generalize, but there's a certain aspect of San Diego is like bro culture. I don't miss that, but I do miss the beach, which is lame. I'm a grown man. I was like,
it's not lame. I lived in Barcelona for a couple of years. I can relate. I miss the beach. I miss sunshine. And that sounds cheesy, but it's okay.
Someday. Well, I'll be back.
Right. Thank you, Dylan, so much.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you so much for checking out that episode of the podcast. It was an absolute pleasure having Dylan on and getting to chat with him. I'm such a big fan of Spanish Love Songs and can't wait for gigs to be back to normal so we can all hang out and sing along to their wonderful songs. If you did enjoy the podcast, please, please share it about. Tell your mates. Send me a message. Let me know what you thought, what you'd like improved, what kind of questions you want me to ask in future. All that stuff really, really helps. Keeps me encouraged. And if you really want to help us out, you can buy me a coffee. The link is in the bio. That is super useful and is all going towards upgrading the podcasting microphone I currently use. Also, check out some of our other episodes. There are some bangers out there. I am going to definitely recommend the one with Jimmy from Polar Bear Club. And also chuck in there the Jason Lytle episode from Granddaddy. I absolutely loved that one. It's done really, really well. Wonderful conversation. But yeah, check some out. Have a listen. Definitely check out Spanish Love Songs. Have a look at their Patreon. All the links are in the bios. Help them out. You know, bands have been having a tough time at the moment. And yeah, have a good week. Enjoy your weekend. I will catch you next time.